Hello everybody, this is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business. I'm speaking in Geneva at the Palais des Nations on the shores of Lac Leman. And I'm with Aruna Chandrasekhar, who is an officer who works on business and human rights issues at Amnesty International in India. Aruna, I have a couple of questions for you. One is the climate for human rights defenders in India, and the other is the campaigns on issues such as mining. So let's start with the climate for human rights defenders in India. There has been a crackdown on NGOs, and there have been historic stories of defenders going back to cases such as Binaxen on one hand, but even otherwise people who take on corporations. What is the situation? Is it really a difficult environment, or is it that things are the same as they were, but just they're getting more publicity?
I do think that there are systemic issues that have persisted on ground, especially looking at defenders at the village level, at the district level, who are directly in line of threat, who live where these gigantic mines are, who face threats every day from both state as well as non-state actors, but at the same time have this really poor access to remedy, who are fighting with multiple false cases that have been filed against them, and continue to operate in that environment, which is incredibly risky. At the same time, we have been seeing also recent trends where organizations such as Greenpeace India have been especially in the limelight following the Intelligence Bureau report, which named several different organizations, including Amnesty International India, as in terms of especially working on development projects. So I think in terms of that, there is definitely a very interesting change of climate, and we've seen more and more instances of also shutting down forums for dialogue that human rights defenders as well as communities have on ground. For example, public hearings for coal mining projects have been exempted for many different mines of different sizes. You've seen attempts to do away with Gram Sabha, which is also village council, hearings and consent for many different kinds of projects as well. So
now this is in spite of the land ordinance being withdrawn in the end. Because I know one of the things that the Land Acquisition Act that was planning to do was to do away with the consultation and consent part of it and do away with the assessment part of it. But I understand that law has been withdrawn, am I right?
Right. That particular bill has been withdrawn. But what has happened is that 13 central laws are still exempt from these provisions of consent and social impact assessment that are contained within the 2013 Act. Now that, for instance, includes the Coal Bearing Areas Act, which covers public sector mining companies such as Coal India, and they're not required to conduct social impact assessments, which also have public hearings as part of it, and also taking the consent of Adivasi communities who live in Schedule 5, that is protected indigenous areas and territories. And this also includes acts such as the Indian Railways Act. And so you are seeing that kind of manifestation on ground where these huge projects are proceeding without any real human rights impact, forget about human rights impact assessment baseline.
So the government would respond and say that these projects are all development projects, they're going to create jobs, they're going to bring about prosperity, and the NGOs which are opposing them, such as Amnesty, such as Greenpeace, and such as even the Indian NGO community, are against development. So are you against development? What's exactly Amnesty's view on these large projects?
Amnesty has no position on any particular kind of development model, and we'd like to reiterate that we're not opposed to any kind of industry. We believe that there is a need for development, or whatever the development projects that there are, or models, that they must include respect for human rights, that and where human rights are violated, that organizations such as Amnesty will definitely look at those impacts and raise concerns.
And what has been the response from the government this time versus what it was, let's say, in 2013 when the act was passed? What I'm talking about, you had a change of government in that time, and has there been any qualitative change in the discourse between the government and NGOs?
I do think that, I mean, as I can speak from only from our
only from Amnesty's perspective.
From our perspective, we had actually had the fortune to also engage with the government. For instance, we were invited to be part of the Joint Parliamentary Committee on the Land Acquisition Bill. So during that, we had raised concerns about various different dilutions that, and stress that whatever the process, they must include consent, they must include consultation, and they must include social impact assessment. On the basis of this, we were asked for our inputs to also share what are relevant international standards and what are other countries doing in different places. So we've shared those inputs as well. So in terms of that, we've, in terms of engaging with the government on development projects or on legislation, we have been able to put our views across without,
And how receptive has been the government in that process?
It has been, at least on the land acquisition bill, has been fairly receptive. And we ran a campaign where we'd asked citizens to also join this public consultation and, to express their views and comments and submit responses. And out of around the 600 or so submissions they received, around 350 or above that were from people who came on board Amnesty's campaign on this. So, it was interesting to also see some amount of public mobilization and, of course, having the opportunity extended to us to express our views on this. So we hope that this engagement continues, at least from the perspective of us asking for human rights safeguards, especially on development projects.
So one final question, and this is about your ongoing long-standing campaign on Bhopal.
Right.
And what I have a question about is the whole notion of impunity. It's been going on now. We are now almost entering the fourth decade of the situation, and where we are with no real end in sight in terms of, you know, how to move the process. What is the situation now? What can be done about it? Is there any scope for justice, particularly on the toxic waste that followed the accident itself in 1984?
It is truly shameful that this is this is going to be the 31st anniversary this year. There was very strong campaign and very strong protests and movements from people on ground, and as there will be with every anniversary, unfortunately, this doesn't seem to be met with any kind of suitable response. While there was one last year from the Minister for Chemicals and Fertilizers who had said that compensation would be revised according to medical and scientific data, there has been absolutely no movement on this. And this is something that communities on ground are incredibly agitated about. Is there going to be movement? Will Dow finally show up? I mean, this is going to be, I think, the third summons which is issued to them. And we're hoping that there would be government pressure during the Prime Minister's visits to the US and so on, but there hasn't been any movement on that front from what we can see. So the situation is quite depressing, but then hoping that in terms of, with the government's initiative talking about Swachh Bharat in different
that
parts.
That means clean
of,
India,
clean
yes.
Clean India and in different parts of the country. I think we must first begin with Bhopal. And that legacy is something that stain, and that is where our business and human rights legacy begins and seems to be with us, and it will continue to haunt us unless there is
some
concerted effort
it, yeah.
that's taken, at least now in the 31st year. I mean, otherwise we're going to keep counting anniversaries, and impunity is going to follow
persist,
us through.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I know it's a huge task ahead, and all the best to you and to your colleagues at Amnesty.
Thank you so much.